scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, we are underway. It is already Thursday, September 5th. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Hopefully your Thursday and your week is going all right. Mr. Gilbertson, hello to you.
Hello to you, kind sir.
We kick off this hour by welcoming in another friend of the program. We say hello to Brendan Parker from Calgary Flames TV. Flames TV, he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Parks, of course, was part of Wednesday night's candlelight vigil at the Scotiabank Saddledome for Johnny Gaudreau. And in what was, again, just another powerful hour or so down at the Dome with incredible visuals and everything that went down was so organic and so genuine. And Parks, the best word that I could use for what happened and listening to Lanny or Michael Backlund, Craig Conroy. It was pretty powerful Wednesday night at the Dome, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good word to describe it. There was a couple of moments specifically kind of throughout the evening. I mean, I think you have an expectation of what, you know, the evening's going to feel like a little bit. We know why we're there. But when you were kind of walking out of the Scotiabank Saddledome where everybody was waiting just to kind of come out before we were about to begin, just, you know, probably just after 8 o'clock, the whole group, former teammates, everyone from the organization, alumni, you name it, as they started to come out, there was an applause kind of from the crowd. And I was talking to somebody after, and it just kind of described it as like, if you could, you know, if whatever the number was, a few thousand people were, you know, it wasn't the type of cheer you'd hear from inside the arena. It felt like the kind of cheer that was like, we're here for you. Like if a collective group could somehow convey that message through an applause, that's what it felt like. And it was just like, it was just perfect for that moment. And, it was supportive and obviously hugely emotional for everybody that was up on those stairs and everybody that was there. I mean, I think you could kind of feel that. And, organizationally, I think everyone's super proud of the night and how it looked. And obviously just the ability to bring everybody together like that and share a night and share, you know, a few different moments like that. I mean, it was difficult. I think everybody could feel that. Anyone that was there would feel the emotion, the heaviness that was with it, but also it was beautiful. That's another word I'd use for it. It's just beautiful to see that kind of support. Yeah. The city coming together like that, and then obviously just everybody being able to kind of to share that experience last night.
Parks, I've asked this question in the locker room, a gazillion times, whether it's after a player's first goal or they've just been called up or whatever. You sort of preface it by saying, I know it's hard to answer right now, but what are you going to remember the most about a night like this? And I want to ask you that about last night. If you fast forward however many years, what do you think is going to stick with you about that candlelight vigil?
I think it's two moments. I think it's that feeling, just as I was kind of describing, as we were standing there and everyone was coming out. I don't know how, I've never felt something like that. Like it was heavy, but it felt like you were doing something or part of something that was purposeful, something that meant a lot to a lot of people. It was that feeling just before it started, just that applause. I think that was part of it. And the second one for me is just when the candlelight, the digital candlelights, the vigil, that portion of the vigil, the 13 minutes of silence, I think it's looking out onto the crowd and seeing all the lights, seeing the digital displays of the candlelight, and then just the silence. You know, the silence for that period of time was powerful. I think at the start you could hear, I think there was a helicopter nearby. You know, there was a drone that was kind of flying, providing those overhead pictures. Mm-hmm. But then eventually, just as it sort of settled in after the amazing grace, and the bagpiper, it was just this silence for 9 minutes. And I don't know that you would ever be around that many people that were making so little noise aside from, you know, maybe the odd whimper, or you could kind of hear, you know, the odd person maybe just sharing a quiet conversation. It was just so peaceful. It was so quiet, and it was just so perfect.
Yeah. It's been a super heavy week, and that of course was a big part of the super heavy week. Just your overall reflections, Parks. You know, being at the Dome and being in the organization, having a relationship and a personal bond with Johnny and the family. Just kind of your reflections of the last week.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I think when we all found out, you know, I think everybody has kind of a different story as to, you know, when you learned Thursday night and then, you know, found out it was official on Friday morning. And, you know, I ended up kind of sneaking out on the weekend out of town and wasn't really around the office over the course of the weekend, obviously just texting and talking with people kind of over the phone and through text message and things like that. But, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it still feels in many ways like it's just not real. I don't know. It's hard to wrap your head around just the magnitude of it. And then, you know, you go through these things like that last night and you obviously know it and it's surrounded by it. But you just simply can't wrap your head around it yet. And I think, you know, somebody texted me just today just about kind of feeling like it's a bit of a fog. And I think that's pretty accurate in terms of how you describe it. And, you know, you're walking around and you're asking everybody within the organization how they're doing. And I think right now, you know, I think everybody is just sort of being there for each other. I think everybody, you know, asks the question and everyone's just trying to provide the support that's needed, not only, you know, amongst themselves or amongst each other, but I think, you know, you see something like that tonight. I think everybody kind of put focus into that, put their efforts and energy into, you know, doing something that was important for the city, important for the organization, obviously, and then important for the fan base as, you know, an opportunity to mourn like that. I think, you know, that's a lot of times the best way to do it is just to kind of, you know, put that energy, put that sadness into something. And, you know, I think you feel it, you feel how heavy it is, you feel the weight of it. I think it's like all of you guys, you can't put yourselves in the family shoes right now. And I think that's the part that gets you, like every day throughout different moments of the day, you just have these moments where you stop and think like, my goodness, you know, I just can't help but think of them constantly throughout the day. And, you know, we've all had our run-ins with the family. You know, I think, I don't know about you guys, but I remember back to that playoff run, you know, Guy just loved, you know, he loves hockey so much that he was there every morning for the morning skates. And they just loved having those chats with him, kind of breaking down, debriefing from the night before and just thinking about how significant those playoff games felt. And then, and all those moments. And, you know, we would talk about the power play and you would talk about how they weren't scoring here and how they were going to find some, you know, it was just like all of those things that you do on a daily basis that, you know, you just, it just breaks your heart to think about, you know, the reality that we're left with now. But, you know, those are the things you just can't stop thinking about the family, really. It just kind of hits you through different parts of the day.
I don't know about you, Parks, and you know, you've been around the building this week, and it just, every time, and I think as we've worked through this week, the thing that has maybe struck me most, and I think the reason why it has been so impactful, and I didn't really come to like understand why it had been so impactful until watching Michael deliver his 3 or 4 minute address, which, you know, it was just heart wrenching to watch Michael and how broken up he is. And that's what it was. You know, guys are angry after games, and yeah, when there's a big loss, it's somber in the locker room. But there's always a feel that it's still just hockey, right? And as bad as a loss might be, or as disappointing as a early playoff exit might be, or not making the playoffs, or whatever the case may be, there's always that realization that in the end, it's like, okay, this is their job, and they're still like, you know, it's still entertainment, and it's still there for the fans. And so there's always that I don't know, I'm trying to think of the right word, but you know, guys are always guarded, and guys are always like, they always put on that really tough facade. You don't see a lot of guys crying after losses and stuff like that. Well, here we're used to being around guys that, you know, it's a tough game, and we're used to those tough faces, and we're used to that kind of invincible facade, and that ain't there. Like, whether it was watching and talking to Craig Conroy, or backs broke me last night. That was the time that I was like, holy cow, I can barely handle this. We talked to Tree yesterday, talking and texting and checking in with different people around the dome. Parks, you've seen people in person. Like that continues to be the most impactful part to me, is just seeing how many people are truly torn up about this thing.
Yeah, I think that is kind of an interesting, you know, just even listening to some of the guys at the Columbus Vigil, you know, Eric and Brant, and some of the stories of teammates, you know, that spent a lot of time with him. You know, one of the things they credit the most is his, and we heard it in Michael Backlund's speech, and I think, you know, you give him a lot of credit, Johnny Gaudreau, for his kind of ability to take things lightly, to, you know, as he said to Backs, you know, don't take things so seriously, it's just hockey. And I think he always held that ability, and maybe sometimes people faulted him for it, and then, you know, you realize that maybe that was what made him, or at least part of what made him so great, was his ability to turn it on when it needed to be turned on, but just to not take it too seriously. And that it was, you know, a game that he loved and a game that he cherished, but, you know, there was just so much more to Johnny Gaudreau than the sport of hockey. And obviously front and center of that is his family, which we've come to know. And I think that's one of the common themes we've heard from so many of his former teammates, is his ability to always have a smile on his face and to take things lightly as it goes along throughout the course of a season. And I think we saw and got a sense of that as we got to know him a little bit more, and then just saw, you know, obviously everything that came with it, but then, you know, I even, you know, I think about, you know, when Johnny, you know, decided to go to Columbus, and, you know, I even had one buddy, you know, a diehard Flames fan, and he kind of texted about just like, I can't believe that we, you know, even worried about that, you know, like it just seems so insignificant right now. And I think, you know, you could treat that with anything, when it comes to the sport of hockey. You just want to be able to go back and talk about things like the power play or point production, because it's just so insignificant compared to what we're now dealing with and what we're now talking with. And I think that is probably the underlying theme of it all. And it's just hard. It's just really hard to kind of know what to say or what to do. It's just, you know, I think, you know, you're just really thinking about the family and anything, any little thing that you can do to, you know, help show your support and kind of be there, and just kind of breaks your heart.
Parks, when you talk about the demeanor, you know, the easygoingness, just the personality that endeared him to all of his teammates over the years, is there a moment, like, is there a memory that is going to kind of stay with you that really maybe, and I know you're not, you know, in the locker room 5 minutes before the game and all that, but is there a moment that's going to kind of stay with you in terms of just sort of revealing that personality that Johnny had?
You know, the one thing I keep thinking about, and I don't know if it necessarily has to do with teammates, but it kind of does. I mean, remember how close he was to getting 100 points, you know, a couple of seasons before, right? And how much, you could just tell how much his team wanted to get him there. And then, you know, 2022, and you look at the year that he hit the 100-point plateau, and obviously his best season as a member of the Calgary Flames, and you could just feel kind of that moment coming. And you could feel the pride from within the room, you know, about a milestone like that and how important it was. And they would always underplay it. You know, they would always talk, you know, it's about the wins, and obviously they were having a great season that year. And I think it was April 12th, 2022. And he gets that 100 point in the game. And, you know, everybody, everybody was so proud, right? Like, it was such a big moment for the organization. Yeah. It just felt like it was on the path to something, you know, really great, and that only like a superstar can do. And I just remember that night, and there's a couple of videos I've seen since then. Obviously, I have a copy of it myself, but, you know, I remember Guy and Jane were standing behind the desk, and, you know, on nights like that, nights like when they won Game 7, you know, our desk is sitting in between the Calgary Flames room and obviously the visitors room, so, you know, you can hear all of the highs and lows throughout the course of a season. On this night, obviously, it was a historic high, and Guy and Jane were one of the first ones from outside of that locker room to be there, and they were standing outside the room. And I remember looking back, and part of our post-game show, obviously, we're going to, you know, comments from inside the locker room, and Johnny had just made his way to the podium, and Guy and Jane are standing there waiting, just huge smiles, and people are congratulating. I turned back and I said, you know, congratulations, and they were just beaming huge smiles and said, thank you. And then I said, why don't you guys just come on and just come over? And so they joined us on the desk, and we were just having a conversation, and they were talking about how he had to change seats throughout the course of the game to get some better luck going, some better vibes going to get him that point. And then Johnny walked back from the podium, and he just said, you know, I love you.
Yeah.
Love you guys. And it'll just forever be ingrained in my head.
Yeah.
I was, I make a point, and I know maybe you guys do the same. I try to go to one game a year and just sit as a fan and just take it in and enjoy it. And I happen to have picked that game that he got his 100th point.
Oh, you weren't working that night,
no,
hey?
I was sitting in lower bowl, and I was sitting not far from Johnny's parents. And I'll never forget the way that the volume in that building changed every single time he had the puck that night. And I'll never forget the eruption when he did get that point. And also, I'll never forget, I think Guy and Jane might have high-fived everyone within five rows of them. I literally just sat there and watched. And, you know, I've seen family of other players sit in the seats, and they can kind of go incognito, right? Nobody knows that they happen to be the dad of one of the players, or the wife or the mom or whatever. But everybody in this city knew those were Johnny's parents, and that made that 100th point celebration, I think, that much more special.
Yeah, you really could. You could feel the building, and unlike when you're it's about the result of the game, it had a different feel that night because of what you said. It was almost like, you know, and then as the game wore on a little bit more, it kind of became a little more intense because everybody wanted it to happen that night. And, you know, eventually, I think he finished with a couple of assists in that game and finally got it done. But you're so right. And I think, you know, I think Guy and Jane, like, they seemed to relish it, to your point. I mean, they didn't hide from that. They were front and center and just loved every second of it. And I think that's what, you know, part of it that really stood out to me was just how quickly they were down in front of the Flames locker room, and they were waiting, you know, just like as if it was, you know, a game in Pee Wee hockey, you know, waiting for your son to pack everything up out of the room and come out and be the first ones to congratulate him out of the dressing room. It's just like, that's the purity of hockey. That's why we love it. Those are the moments. Just because it's done at the National Hockey League level, you know, doesn't change what makes it so special. And I think that's what it is. It's, you know, it's just pride. It's all about pride. And, you know, that was just one of those extremely special moments.
It was really cool, wasn't it? That in, you know, eight full seasons, nine seasons at the Saddle Dome, like the wow factor for that family that their son was this beloved superstar in Calgary, that never wore off one bit, did it?
Yeah, no, not at all. And you know, the one thing that I always loved is, you know, obviously I travel with the team a fair amount, but it was like, especially if you headed out east, you never knew where you were going to run into the Gaudreaus. You know, it was just like how much they love to be there, how much they love to watch. And obviously they were, you know, probably following Maddie just as closely wherever he was. And but it was like you could be, you know, obviously Philly was an automatic and they were there, and New Jersey and he was always, he's always there. He's just always, you know, ready for morning skate, ready for the game. I remember even one time in Philly, I think he brought his whole, the minor hockey team he was coaching at the time, and it was just littered with Gaudreau jerseys, and they're all, you know, front and center. And Johnny, he was always one of the last to leave the ice after warm up, and you know, he must have flipped, you know, 6, 7, 8 different pucks. They were probably running out of warm up pucks by the end of it, because every time he would loop by, he would flip one over the crowd, and I think he was tapping on the glass, and he's like, "I need one more over here," and Johnny would, you know, he'd spin back and he'd grab one more before leaving the ice. And you know, it's just, you can't associate the Gaudreaus in hockey any closer than it was just, you know, such a passion and such a lifeblood for that family and such a connection for them. It, you know, I you could just see, you know, the love of it every time they're in the rink. And, you know, that's something that you're for sure always going to remember.
Parks, you know, whether it be before you joined Flames TV and we're at Global or the last, geez, what, 6 years now at Flames TV for you? Just your reflections on John the Dude and how he kind of matured and grew and turned, like, by the time, and I, this is one of the things that I've reflected on a lot over the last week, by the time he left and by the time he was made the decision to go back closer to home and play in Columbus, I mean, I think part of the reason why it was viewed, at least on my end, as such a big loss for the team was because not only had this guy just come off 115 points, not only had this guy cemented himself as a superstar and we knew what he was all about in that regard, but like he had turned into a bona fide leader in that locker room and you know, a go-to guy when you needed some tough answers or when you needed a really important quote. Like he really did grow into that over his 9 seasons here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think, you know, I kind of like what Connie was saying last night. Like I was at Global at the time, but I was at that first development camp.
At Don Hartman?
You remember it. So yeah, and I think that's part of why it sticks out in my mind a little bit, is because it was unique to the fact that it was at Don Hartman. Like I remember, you know, I think they brought him like into the lobby area for the
they
media.
Did.
Bell,
yep,
and
they
like,
did.
Yeah. And if you remember, like he came out of the hallway, and much like what, you know, Connie was saying, this is our first chance to see him in person. Like when he came out from the locker room, you know, this is a minor hockey facility. Anyone that's been to Don Hartman, you know, I'm sure your kids have practiced there, you've practiced there or whatever it might be. But like when he came out of, you know, the one rink, you could have thought that maybe there was like a peewee practice going on the other one and he was leaving from that rink. Like you wouldn't have known the difference. Like he looked that young. You know, not that I looked any older, probably anyway, but he looked like he was, yeah, like a 12-year-old just there for the practice. And then you go from like that visual of a guy that's just getting ready to go off to college and inevitably go on to dominate NCAA hockey for a few years to then, you know, the guy that was leaving Calgary for Columbus. I mean, it really is like one of those stories of watching a kid grow up in a city, and there are many of them, but it's just, I think that one stood out so much more because there was this intrigue, there was this excitement about this pint-sized player who just had this unbelievable skill level, unbelievable talent that everybody wanted to go and watch it. And you know, quite honestly, I don't know that there's been, you know, since then, you know, that much intrigue in terms of a kid that's that age, freshly drafted, you know, late round pick. It just was just different around him. And I think part of it was that's the size factor and how youthful he looked. But man, did he change a lot of opinions fast, and did he ever, you know, convert a lot of fans? And I think, you know, yeah, we did. We did see that evolution from him, and even the haircuts, the evolution there, and the fro. And, you know, I think it just, he was a really, you know, a really great guy. And I think, you know, partly you kind of remember those conversations that are impromptu. You run into him at a hotel in a lobby and, you know, obviously you'd never talk really about hockey when you ever bumped into him, but you just sort of, you know, talked about anything else. We shared a love of the show Friends. So I think there was a, you know, a couple conversations about that. One time, I think we swore that we ran into Jennifer Aniston in a hotel lobby one time, but that became the topic du jour because him being a big Friends fan and same with Michael Backlund, everybody wanted to know if it was confirmed, you know, if that had actually happened. And so, you know, I think, you know, you just miss, you know, just those types of run-ins that had nothing to do about hockey and just talking about family. A lot of times it evolved around family.
Do you remember that day at Don Hartman? And it's funny because that's one of my lasting memories is same thing. You're like, who's that? Okay. And then it comes out and like starstruck's the wrong word. Just like deer in the headlights. Cause he had like nine media people waiting to talk to him. And I just remember on either side of the scrum, again, I won't name names, but two reporters from perhaps competing outlets barking at each other about who's going to ask a question. And Johnny was just looking like, what have I gotten myself into? I'll never forget it.
I think that's the other part that stands out. And actually, I don't know, my memory more so is when I was looking at the tape afterward. Because in person, obviously, my head was like kind of like the tennis ball analogy, where it's just back and forth, left to right. But on camera afterwards, the focus was obviously straight at Johnny, and his poor eyes at the time of just like, I can't even imagine what was going through his head. Like, what is going on right now? As he was staring back out, it was something else. And I won't forget like the look on his face is. His introduction to Calgary media was happening right before his eyes.
Exactly.
It was a huge scrum too. I mean, there was a lot of attention. There was a lot of intrigue, like for a development camp in the middle of July. There was a lot of people there. I also remember that.
Yep. There sure was. Hey, kudos to you for getting through last night. I know that was not easy. Even for getting through this year, I know that was, there were a couple of tough moments. Thanks for powering through, buddy. Be well. We'll see you soon. We'll see you in the Okanagan real shortly, hey?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, hockey season is right around the corner, and look forward to seeing you guys around the rink every day soon.
Thanks, Parks.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Brendan Parker of Flames TV joining us here on Flames Talk. He was he was master of ceremonies at the vigil on Wednesday night, candlelight vigil. That was you could be here in Calgary and there, or you could be in Los Angeles or Eastern Europe and see those images and be like absolutely staggered at just how powerful all that was on Wednesday night. So good on everybody who spoke and powered through.
Yeah.
I know that was not easy for Craig Conroy. Again, Michael Backlund just buckled me about two-thirds of the way through. I was fine. I was like, poor backs. And then when he really, the first time, when you're like, oh, boy, he is really struggling getting through this. That's the first time that I've truly, truly been buckled at this thing, been able to hold it together. But that was again, really heavy stuff.
And listen, I know nobody at the Saddle Dome wants any sort of credit.
Yes, nobody needs the kudos.
I know that they, you know, like we all do, everyone wishes, you know, this past week hadn't happened, period. But I think you saw further evidence of what's really made the Flames a first-class organization. I really thought they hit all the right notes last night, as they've made a habit of doing.
Yep. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. By the way, Brendan Parker, Flames TV on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Thursday edition of the program. Continuing to reflect on what has been a heavy, difficult week here in the city of Calgary. Perhaps as heavy as it got on Wednesday night at that candlelight vigil. The images from Columbus as well and their candlelight ceremony. Really, really powerful stuff. We heard Michael Backlund, Flames captain, was the first Flames player to speak on this tragedy on Wednesday night. We heard some Blue Jackets speak on it. And boy, you know, there is the one picture that the Flames posted that I was like, geez, I never need to see that one again. Just, you know, having covered Michael his entire career here in Calgary and just seeing that face as he was standing there as the candles got digitally lit, and seeing his face, mm-hmm. just the one picture and just like, it's like that, that's grief-stricken human being. You're like, you just seeing that on Bax's face, knowing he's such a generally happy and laid back human being, and seeing that on his face, you're just like, oh, that was one of many, yeah. many difficult images to see. I was talking to Ryan Leslie earlier on this Thursday, and he sent me a picture. And again, you're just like, oh, that is,
yeah,
it's just been a heavy, heavy week. So,
well, and
go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
And I made this point to you off air. You know, to see the emotion, and you would anticipate it, obviously, but to see the emotion and then to remind yourself that it's been 5 or 6 days that we've been digesting this yeah. news, and to see the impact it still has on Michael Backlund, to see Erica Branson, who's as tough an hombre as you're going to meet in the game of hockey, choking on his words and overcome with emotion. Like, I think that just drives yeah. home how much the hockey world is still struggling and understandably so to wrap its collective head around what's happened and who we've lost.
So you kind of came up with this idea and I like it, you know, as sad as this has been and immeasurably sad, I think sadder than many of us imagined it was going to be when the news first started breaking. Not to say we didn't think it was going to be sad, but boy, this has been as difficult and somber a week that I think any of us can quite remember. And I know that you haven't been sleeping much and other people, like it's been that type of week that I don't think you really, you're never prepared for it. And when you hear the news Thursday night or Friday morning or whenever the news became a reality for you, it just, I know for me, it's been even harder than I was anticipating it mm-hmm. being. And I was not anticipating it to be easy. Don't get me wrong, but maybe just some stories and some reflections from you and I, and a couple of questions we wanted to ask one another. Maybe want me to go first? You want to go first?
Yeah, and so just to set this up, you know, we've done this on far more lighthearted topics where we just kind of throw questions at each other. We don't know what the questions are going to be, so we haven't been brainstorming all day on what memories we're going to share. But let's just, you and I both covered the entirety of Johnny Gaudreau's 9 seasons at the Saddle Dome, and so. Yeah, let's just throw around some memories.
Well, let me ask you this. I think you spoke to Johnny in the Calgary media more than anybody between June of 2011 and April of 2014, that almost 3-year stretch between him getting drafted and him signing and debuting. You spoke to him multiple times a year during his 3 seasons at Boston College. What do you remember about interviewing him during those 3 years? And what do you remember about those phone chats that you had with this young college kid that continued to have like, he was becoming a U.S. superstar
yeah.
before he was ever a Flames sure. superstar, right?
I'm grinning as you mentioned this question. I remember, here's what I remember about talking to Johnny Gaudreau when he was at Boston College. It used to drive me professionally. It used to drive me nuts. And I'll explain that. The reason being that Johnny Gaudreau, as we came to know in Calgary, was not good at talking about himself. He was so humble. He was so down to earth. And that worked for a reporter in the Flames locker room, because when he downplayed one of the crazy things that he'd just done with the puck, you'd go ask any of his teammates about it, and they'd lift their jaws off the floor for long enough to give you some sort of great quote. Or you'd go ask Bob Hartley, and you know, he'd crack jokes, and it would just be, you'd have in coming at it from my angle as a writer, you'd have your story. When I would interview Johnny at Boston College, all he wanted to tell me was how good his teammates were and how good his coaches were. And you'd hang up the phone swearing that, you know, anyone could have 70 points on that team. And I remember it being a real challenge professionally, because nobody in Calgary cared about his teammates at Boston College. I mean that obviously respectfully. You know, Bill Arnold was a bit of a curiosity, and then beyond that, they didn't care what line Johnny was on, you know, who was on the number one power play unit. None of that's pertinent in a prospect profile. And so to answer your question, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is, man, this is a really difficult assignment, because this kid, to his credit, just doesn't want to talk about himself.
I talked to him maybe once or twice a year during that stretch as well. And I do remember he became more comfortable and more like willing and ready to talk just overall as those years went along. I think he just became more comfortable. I mean, you go from being a freshman at college to a sophomore and then a junior. And I think he just, you could tell that he became more comfortable just talking and doing interviews during that 3 year span. I do remember that pretty vividly. And to the point that, you know, you're like, okay, like it's good. Like we got this John Gaudreau coming on the program.
And, yeah.
Even I remember the day that he decided to go back for his junior season. He came on. I remember Ryan Leslie and I were doing the show at the time. Is when it was him and I on the big show. And we were doing a show, I think it was East Hills, South Street Burger is okay. Where we were doing the show when the news came down. And there was a lot of panic, if you remember, about Johnny going back for year three and not going pro. It's like, oh, is he gonna go the Justin Schultz route? Which obviously, as Connie told the story at the vigil on Wednesday, was never going to happen. But, you know, you're wondering on the outside, you know, the Oilers just got burned by Schultz and the Ducks just got burned by Schultz and what, you know, how many more of these are going to happen? Is that going to happen here in Calgary? And I just remember Johnny coming on with us and fully comfortable talking. Was like, oh no, like, I still want to play for the Flames. I just want to play with my brother.
Yeah.
And I remember how easy that conversation was. I thought it was going to be way more uncomfortable
because
of how panicked, but Flames fans were at the time. But no, I remember him becoming much more at ease with doing interviews over the phone anyway, as those 3 years went on.
It's funny now to reflect on. I still don't think until he arrived in Calgary, he understood the sort of fuss that was following him around here.
I still don't know if he ever
fully
realized how much of a fuss there was about
him. Okay, I got one for you.
Yeah.
You've talked obviously about, you know, being there at the draft and the excitement the organization had over this tiny prospect, and you know, you followed the hype at Boston College, you see him at development camps, he arrives in Calgary, yada yada. Was there a moment that you kind of got it, if that's the right way? A moment that you sort of got what Johnny Gaudreau could be all about?
Yeah, you know, it was during his rookie season, and it was at the annual poker tournament. And you've done a poker tournament before, where you know the guys are really at ease and really. You know, it's more of a laid back atmosphere, right? Because, you know, they're having fun, they're having a few drinks, they're just hanging out. And so I remember Johnny coming down and sitting down with me and Rob Kerr at the time. And, he was doing the interview and talking about his rookie season. Like, we were more than halfway through the rookie season. It was becoming more and more apparent. The Flames are like, hey, this team's probably going to make the playoffs. Like, they put that eight-game skid that we talked about with Tree on Wednesday. Right. Like, that L.A. game was now a couple months in the rear view.
He'd just been to the All-Star game.
He had been an All-Star. That's right. Because he was originally going to go as kind of like a young player. Then he got turned into a regular All-Star. So he was sitting with us, and at some point in the middle of the conversation, I asked him, I'm like, do you realize like who you are in this city? Like, he was 20 years old at the time, 21 years old. Like, do you realize what you are in this city? Do you realize how big a deal you are? He's like, you know how he'd always say, no, like he'd always start with no and no. And then he's no, I just like playing hockey. And I just come to the rink and play hockey, and you know, I like to hang out with the guys, and that was when you're just kind of like, huh, that's what this kid is all about.
Yeah.
Like, I just remember him and not, he wasn't being modest as a front. It was like he didn't know that he was this massive superstar in the city of Calgary that Flames fans were buying jerseys of and buzzing about, and you know, on TV people would get out of their seats watching whenever he wound up in the defensive zone or at the dome or whatever the case may be. And it just was a real genuine obliviousness to how big.
I like that word for it. Yeah.
And it was in such an endearing way, right? Like, not in a, that's not in a derogatory or any connotation other than like he was just oblivious to how big a deal he was in this city. And I think he probably caught on as time went along, but I don't think he ever fully realized how big a deal that last name was and that number 13 was in this city for almost a decade.
Teammates absolutely adored him for it too. He, you know, some guys get the most fame and the biggest paycheck, and it can, I don't want to say alienate them from their teammates, but you know, there's some guys that wind up on a bit of a pedestal, and you just never felt that way with Johnny Gaudreau.
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that first game? You were there in Vancouver, April 13th, 2014. What would have been like a whirlwind 24, 48 hours for Johnny.
Yeah.
Colby Baker, season ending, signing contract, flying into Vancouver from Philly, and now about to make his NHL debut.
Well, I remember one of the more noteworthy assists of Chris Breen's NHL career. Was it a Chris Breen shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it was.
Chris Breen.
I know Breen was on one of the assists.
I guess it was a deflection for Johnny's first career goal. It wouldn't go near the top of his highlight reel of the 210 that he scored on behalf of the Flames. I remember a couple things. I remember the hype around his arrival, obviously, and I remember every single question at Morning Skate was about Johnny Gaudreau, and you have to understand that guys who've been in the NHL for 10 years are really, really hesitant to hype up a guy that they've never seen.
Yeah.
And also when said guy arrives and weighs about 150 pounds and they themselves aren't really sure or aren't really convinced that this is going to work at the NHL level. And, you know, I sort of think back to Nikita Zadorov being asked about Dustin Wolf after his first victory and, you know, sort of politely saying, hey guys, let's pump the brakes. And I do remember that was very much the atmosphere around Morning Skate. There was a little bit of jealousy, if that's the right word for it, that Johnny Gaudreau, having never played a game in the NHL, was the big story. And this is sort of a strange thing to remember, but I was actually thinking about this earlier this week. I'm not sure how many people recall this, but one of the Sedin brothers was taken off the ice on a stretcher that night, got pasted right in the numbers by Paul Byron. And there was some concern, as there is anytime a hockey player needs to be stretchered off. And I remember, because I'd heard so much about Johnny's mom, Jane, being worried about what someone his size would be capable of in the NHL and really worried about him turning pro. And as this was happening, besides your concern for the player on the stretcher board, I'm thinking to myself, man, this must be really hard on Johnny's family. They were the first people I thought of because there was some concern about him playing in the NHL. And it's funny, I guess, the things that stick with you. But when I think of that game, beyond Johnny's first goal, that's the first thing that comes to mind every single time.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. And by the way, do you remember it was Johnny Gaudreau's first from Joe Colburn and Chris Breen?
Okay.
It was a Breen shot, and then it kind of went from there.
Kind of caromed from there, yeah. Okay.
And probably still the most famous of the goals scored that night in a 5-1 loss.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, I got kind of a fun one for you.
Yeah.
And I see a few different options to answer this. I'm curious which way you're going to go. Which Johnny Gaudreau line was your favorite to watch?
Oof. Favorite one to watch? I think my favorite one to watch, because there's the three that, like, the three real obvious options, right?
Yeah.
The best one was with Tkachuk and Lindholm. Like, that was the most dominant of the lines, no question, for that one year. But the one that was the most fun to watch, I think, was that Lindholm and Monahan line.
Like, okay.
The middle line, because there was Monahan, Hudler, and Gaudreau on the one end of the sandwich, and then Tkachuk, Lindholm, and Gaudreau on the other. And then in the middle was Monahan between Lindholm on the right and Gaudreau on the left. And that was the one that was the most fun because, I don't know, the Tkachuk one came out of nowhere too, but this one, we had no idea what Elias Lindholm was.
Yeah.
Like, we were excited. Bill Peters at the time raved about him. But we didn't know what Elias Lindholm was. And so the first time I remember, I was thinking to myself, oh, they've got a line here, was a night early in the season in Colorado where it was Lindholm tied the game late. It was a game where the Flames must have outshot the Avalanche like 50-18. There's no way they should have been trailing, but they were. But Lindholm, with just a ridiculous shot from that patented area, tied it. And I just remember saying to myself, damn, like, these guys have got chemistry.
Yeah.
And because you knew Johnny and Sean had chemistry.
Yeah.
But you didn't know, and they had just missed the playoffs the year before in Glenn Gullitson's last year, and that was frustrating, and so on and so forth. And they put that Lindholm line together with Monahan and Gaudreau, and it was like instant. And that one was so fun. I think part of it was the every time they scored, Sportsnet took the shot of spraying the purple Gatorade.
Right.
Like, yeah. I think just all of those things, how unexpected it was, kind of this Elias Lindholm. They're like, oh, Elias Lindholm, right? And that was the one that was the most fun for me.
I know we got to get out here, so I'll keep this brief. My vote would go to the boys in the hoods line because it was all such a bonus, right? You knew when those three got on the ice, you were going to be entertained. It might have been the entire shift in the offensive zone. It might have been the entire shift in the defensive zone. You knew there wasn't another line on the team. No offense to Lance Boma's breakout season or David Jones. Like, if they were going to score a goal, it was going to need to be the boys in the hoods line. And I just, because the whole idea that would be an NHL first line at that point with two young guys and a guy who was defensively indifferent, it was just, I had so much fun watching those guys.
To this date, September 5th, 2024, covered that whole season. Never heard Boys in the Hoods until right now.
Oh, yeah?
I've never heard that before. And I'm sure that I'm sure that's just...
That's just you,
ignorance on my end.
Yeah, that was everywhere.
But I'd never heard of Boys in the Hoods until right now. I like that. That's quite good. Another day as part of another heavy week here on Flames Talk. Matt and John Gaudreau's funeral will be held Monday in Philadelphia. And look, I mean, there's going to be some more heavy moments over the next, anytime you think of the Gaudreau family, it's going to instantly be heavy because that that family and those that friend group and like that. This isn't going away next week, next year. Like this is, as we know, this is sticking with them forever. And time goes on, and as we all know, having grieved at different points in everybody's lives, you know, the pain subsides or at times fades to the background, but that family will never be the same. And so, you know, I hope that we go out of our way to publicly, privately, out loud or not, to keep that family in our thoughts as this season goes along and as we move into the following season and so on and so forth. Because, you know, it's going to be every start of the hockey season is going to be a painful reminder. I just hope that we, and I know the hockey world will, keep the Gaudreau family in their hearts. But, you know, it's going to be some tough days. You know, Penticton is going to be difficult. There's going to be tributes there, and opening out of the preseason, opening out of the regular season, when Columbus is here, when the Flames go to Columbus, all that. There's going to be the funeral on Monday. There's going to be some difficult days going forward.
Yeah, for sure.
But it is all part of the process of moving through it. And so, yeah, another heavy day. Another part of a heavy week, but we're glad that you're with us as we continue to all work through it at the same time. It's Pat and Wes along with you. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you this hour, has been coming at you from the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.